Well, we're very fortunate once again to have a really special guest stop by the studios of WRTI, and he is really a major presence on the campus of Temple University, the director of jazz studies at the Boyer School of Music, and a phenomenal trumpeter and a hell of an educator in his own right as well. And we're very fortunate to have Mr. Terrell Stafford stop by and hang out with us for a few moments. Great to have you here, man.
Thank you, man. It's great to be here.
No, it's truly a pleasure, and long overdue. I think this is the first time we've actually done this. But, you know, I've been a fan of your work for many years, and, you know, I think I've had the good fortune to see a lot of the progression, you know, for you. You know, we want to chat a little bit about the education side. And a wonderful event that's coming up to help celebrate and you know, document the importance of education and some of the activities that are going on. But, you know, I would be remiss not to touch on, you know, a grander scale. I mean, you've had a really wonderful career, and some of the folks that that you've had a chance to touch and be touched by, you know, I think it's important to note, man, that, you know, just having the opportunity to connect with the McCoy Tyners, you know, when you start talking about the legends and the legacy and the tradition, I'm going to throw a few names at you and just get some of your pat responses. When you hear a name like McCoy Tyner, what comes to mind for Terrell Stafford?
Well, you know, McCoy Tyner, I met him probably when I decided I wanted to play jazz in my 20s. And I met him at a club in D.C., actually, Blues Alley. And he was performing with a person I didn't even know who was going to do so much for me, but a guy, Bobby Watson. And Bobby heard me at a jam session that week and said, "Hey, I want you to come to my gig on Friday and hang out, and I want to talk to you, and then I think I want you to come to New York and audition for my group, Horizon." And when I showed up to Blues Alley, I thought it was just going to be Bobby and the average quartet, and it was Bobby with McCoy Tyner's trio.
Wow.
And yeah, I met McCoy, had no idea what I wanted to say to him. And so he said, "Nice to meet you, nice to meet you." I said, "Yes." I said, "One day, hopefully, we'll play together." He said, "Yeah, yeah." And I think like 2 years later, McCoy called me for a gig to go to Japan, with the McCoy Tyner Latin All-Stars.
Wow.
Yeah. It was kind of a funny story. When he called me originally, I picked up the phone. I said, "Hello." He said, "Hey, there's McCoy Tyner." I said, "Ah, ha, ha." I thought it was John Faddis, so I hung up. I thought it was Faddis playing a joke on me. So I hung up, and the phone rang back again. He said, "There's McCoy Tyner." I tried again, and something got disconnected. I said, "Oh, my God." So
you almost hung up on your future,
yeah,
man.
I did.
That's amazing. Just from an experience like that, you know, spending a little time, you know, what type of lessons do you learn from a McCoy Tyner?
It's amazing. I mean, you know, even just, you know, he's a really quiet man, but I would ask him different questions. Like, I never forget the way that he wrote a chord on a piece of music. And I said, "McCoy, you know, how do you approach this sound?" And he goes, "Oh, it's really easy." And he sat at the piano and he showed me. And I played along with all the not only the chord, but trying to pick up some of the language he was using. And he goes, Wasn't that easy? I said, "Yeah, it was really easy." He goes, "Just remember, if you have any questions, you should always ask them." And so that was one huge lesson. And then another thing that was really touching, we were in Italy. And out of nowhere, he called me and said, "You know, Stafford, what are you doing?" I said, "Nothing." He said, "Good. Let's go on one of those, the tours through the city." And we got on that boat and we started to talk, and he started to ask me questions. He goes, "You know, I realize that I don't know a lot about you and where you come from and your family. And you know, I don't talk about a lot. So this is a time for us to talk." And he said, "You know, always get to know the members in your band, because it goes way beyond the music." So that was the next huge gem that I got from McCoy.
Yeah. That's, you know, it's so so great to hear you speak like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, recently, you know, had a chance to chat with Sonny Fortune.
Mm.
And, you know, Sonny's been down a few times over the years with me. But in some of the loose conversation we had after the quote unquote interview,
mm-hmm.
He spoke about how Miles taught him how important his rhythm section would be.
Mm.
You know, rhythm sections, you know, are the staple, and the people that you have and that chemistry that you have with the rhythm section can make or break, you know, what you're trying to do. And
absolutely.
He said he learned that from Miles. So,
wow.
You know, it's always great to hear you talk about those type of lessons. But you mentioned Bobby Watson.
Yep.
And definitely he was the name that I was going to throw at you. You know, the great Bobby Watson, you know, as an educator and, you know, as a musician, connecting with Horizon, you know, that, what are you, like, right out of Rutgers, at Rutgers in that time frame?
I was.
What was going on with that?
Well, you know, when I met Bobby, he spoke about, you know, hey, I have this gig at this club in New Jersey called Struggles. And that's kind of, you know, after I did my quote unquote audition, I had this gig with him. And the name of the club was Struggles. And it was really indicative of my night. Because it was like my really first time playing a professional jazz gig. And I hadn't been playing jazz all that long. And so the guys that he chose on the gig, Victor Lewis was on drums. Christian McBride was on bass. Joey Calderazzo was on piano. And I'd never heard of any of these guys, you know.
Okay.
And so it was that time when I finally met Christian. And so finally, you know, we played the first tune. And it was really fast. And I just totally folded on this first tune. I was like, wow, this is terrible. And so Bobby played a solo, and it was unbelievable. So I was thinking in my mind, well, it's so fast. You know, the bass player, he'll never be able to play this fast. Well, I was wrong. And the piano player, I said, oh, this is really fast for a piano player to play. And I was really wrong. So, you know, being surrounded around that company and Victor Lewis, and he was as much of a mentor and teacher as Bobby, you
mm-hmm.
know, just being around them every day was a lesson. You know, Bobby would, I remember one day he says, I want you to put the set together tonight. And I said, me? And he goes, yeah, I want you to put it together. So I put the set together of all the songs that I really like to play. And then we finished the set. And he said, what'd you think of that set? I said, it was pretty bad. And he goes, yeah, nothing had a flow to it. So when designing a set, here's what you need to do. You need to pick things you love, but pick things that people can connect with. And then figure out ways that you can make it diverse enough that you can take people along a journey. And so, you know, all these guys, you know, had just great things to say.
What do you think Bobby saw in you? I mean, why did he want you to become a part of that ensemble? Did he ever talk to you about that?
He did. He didn't talk to me about it. I asked him,
okay.
actually.
Okay.
Because when we travel different places and we would go to, you know, as a group, we'd play a festival. I'd walk around the festival and I'd hear all these trumpet players that would be amazing. And I'd always feel like, you know, like, why am I in this group? Because you have all these great, you know, great players. And so I asked him, I said, you know, I said, I told him, don't take this the wrong way, but why? Why did you choose me? There's so many great players in New York. I said, I'm appreciative, but I'm just curious. And so he goes, you know, the music is the end result. Friendship, humility, loyalty, honesty, clarity, that's what I look for. And then after that, we know the music is going to be okay.
You know, obviously, there's been, you know, several musicians that have, you know, been a big part of your journey. You know, I know connecting with Wynton Marsalis, you know, fellow trumpeter and,
mm-hmm.
and definitely a cat that seems to push, you know, and at the forefront of trying to preserve the purity of the music, but also provide opportunities. You know, I mean, if you can talk about what that relationship with Wynton is like, with that encounter, you know, those initial encounters, but also the relationship that has developed.
Yeah. Well, he's an incredible, I call him a mentor. I mean, he's a few years older than me, but, you know, mentor is someone that shares information with you and guides you and leads you in directions that you should go in. And he's really, really done that. I mean, I've been a fan of his since I heard him, and he was playing classical music at a really high level, playing jazz at a really high level. That was the goal. That's what I wanted to do in life. I wanted to play both genres at a high level. And so he was always inspiring in that way. And when I met him, he was, you know, he was Wynton. He was really cool. And he asked me if I played trumpet, and I said, kinda. And he gave me the number to his teacher, and he says, you know, if you're not sure that you should be playing, go see my teacher. And that guy, his name is William Fielder, Professor William Fielder. And I went to see, you know, we called him Prof. I went to see Prof. And Prof sat me down, and I played a little bit for him. And he said, you should play trumpet. You should continue. Because I stopped for a while because one of my teachers said that I wasn't sure that my armature was conducive to me playing. But Prof said, you know, it's fine. And he goes, I'll teach you. If you want to come here and study, I'll teach you. And that was the beginning of my relationship really with Wynton, because Prof would always let Wynton know how I was doing, and, you know, if I was, how I was doing in orchestra. I was doing, you know, I played piccolo trumpet a lot back in those days. And every time I've turned around and have needed Wynton for something, he's always been there. But one thing that really pushed me and helped me was he would have me to sub certain times in the Lincoln Center Jazz Orchestra. And there was one instance that I was subbing, and I hadn't really played the plunger that much. Actually, I hadn't played it really at all. And John Faddis was in the section as well. And so we were playing Black and Tan Fantasy. And I started to play the intro, which is like a plunger or growl kind of thing. And I started, I didn't know what growling was, and I didn't. So I kind of faked it the best I could, and went and stops the band. He goes, man, what you doing back there? I said, well, I'm growling. He goes, that's not growling. You know, and you could see the members of the band, like their shoulders bouncing. They were kind of laughing. And he said, hey, man, have you checked out, like, Cootie and Bubba Miley and Rex Stewart? And I said, no. He goes, well, look, if you come tomorrow to rehearsal at noon and you don't know how to use the plunger and play this intro, I'm going to send you home. And, man, you know, I was like, I can't believe I'm about to blow such a great opportunity. And so I called people and I said, man, I need to learn how to use a plunger. I need to learn how to growl. I need to learn how to... And I did. People were helping me that night, and I came and met someone that next morning, and I showed up to rehearsal at noon, and the very first thing he called was Black and Tan Fantasy. And after I played it, he goes, thank you, bro. And, you know, and that was kind of our relationship. And he's hired me plenty of times to go teach for jazz at Lincoln Center. I go watch him do workshops and clinics and watch how he'd conduct himself and watch how he'd speak about the music. And then, you know, he says, you know, you can listen to me, but I want you to figure out your own way of teaching and your own approach, because that'll make you unique as a musician, as a teacher, as an educator. So I did. And then he started to send me out and do things for, and I still do to this day. I still teach band director academies. I still go out and do different festivals. I work with different bands. And he's a great man. He's doing great things for this music.
Yeah, I guess in many respects, he's provided a bit of a model for you to use loosely and you know, build your own, you know, career.
Yep.
One name that I have to throw in there as well is, you know, a cat that I know is you know, if not your best friend, definitely in the top five cats that you probably list would be Tim Warfield.
Oh, yeah.
York, Pennsylvania's own.
Yep.
And, you know, he's, you know, a gifted talent. You know, Mr. Clean and
Clean. Yep.
You know, but you know, it just seems as though every encounter I've ever had with Tim Warfield, man, it's you know, he seems like a really caring guy, and you know, a great sense of humor as well. Yeah. But it seems like the two of you have a special relationship, and if you can talk a little bit about the Tim Warfield connection.
Sure. Well, Tim is by far my best friend. You know, big brother to me, not by too many years, but still. And I met Tim at this jam session. Actually, it was just funny. It's the same jam session that I met Bobby Watson.
Okay.
So this jam session, you know, when I talk to my students about the importance of getting out and making sure people hear you, you know, I tell them, don't take it for granted. I wouldn't be sitting here if it weren't for a jam session and me getting out and playing. And yeah, you fall on your face, but then, you know, you're picked back up. And I'll never forget, you know, I was playing this jam session, and the guy who led the jam session was pretty hard on me. So he's like, man, you got to learn this tune. You got to learn this tune. You got to learn this tune. And 1 week he couldn't be there, and Tim Warfield came in. And so Tim was so easy, so cool. He's like, man, what do you want to play? And I'd call a tune, and we'd play it. And when we played it for the first time, it sounded like we played it before because of the way we phrased it.
Mm.
And we were kind of laughing at each other because we would take breaths in the same spot. And I'd look over at him like, where does he come from, you know? And then I said, yeah, man, you know, I have so much to learn. He goes, man, you should come hang out at my house. And so I had, during the week, I was finishing up my master's in classical trumpet, and I would do that during the week. And on the weekends, I'd go hang out at his house, and his dad had this crazy record collection. And so, you know, and we would listen to records all weekend and learn tunes and learn solos and go hang out and play different places. And he came up with this idea. He said, hey, look, here's what we're going to do. We're going to learn three songs, and we're going to go to every jam session there is, and we're going to play these three songs together, and we're going to get work. I said, man, you're crazy. That's not going to happen. And we learned these three songs, and we went to jam sessions, and that was...
the blueprint.
Yeah. Well over, you know, 25, 30 years later, we're still doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. And we just played a record date last week, or weekend, maybe 2 weeks ago in Michigan. And we came out, and the music was tricky, and the guy said, the reason I wanted to get you and Tim is because I know we wouldn't have to waste time on intonation and phrasing. You guys will play it the first time together and adjust, and mm-hmm. and that's mm-hmm. how it was. It was just amazing.
Right.
So he's you know, he has that sixth sense about him, and he is funny. He's knowledgeable, has a great memory, and his playing is just like his dressing. You know, he pays so much attention to detail. Like when he puts an outfit on, you know, I put things together. I'm like, yeah, I think that'll look good. Tim is like putting images, like this shape should complement this shape. You know, this is a hexagon, and you know, so that's how Tim is when he puts his outfits together, and that's how he is when he plays. He's very detail oriented, and so I've learned tons from him, and I appreciate his friendship more than life.